we leave tonight remembering how great the fighters can be, how great the action in that squared circle, the chamber of truth, can be, how special it can be. And we leave understanding how badly the sport and those fighters need to be better respected and protected by the inadequate, incompetent, corrupt administrators of the sport.
We're going to remember tonight as the night that injustice was done in Vegas.
Courtesy of the sports leader, one of the best breaking news tirades I have ever heard. That was just a small sample of the near 1 hour very emotional banter between ESPN boxing analyst Teddy Atlas and ESPN Stephen A. Smith last night on what was supposed to be Sports Center after the Canelo Alvarez Triple G fight was ruled a draw last night at the T-Mobile Arena. Well, good morning. It is Sunday, and this is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman, and joining me in studio and handling everything but my microphone is future Nevada Hall of Fame producer Magnum. We are here every Sunday from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, the official home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We're also streaming live on LVSportsNetwork.com. The Twitter handle is at Out of Line 1340 AM, and you can find us on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. And of course, without you, there's no show. So if you have something on your mind, give us a call. Turn down your radio and say what you got to say. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
And What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University. And yes, it's week two in the National Football League, and I've got plenty to say about it. But first, being that we're in Las Vegas, this afternoon, history will be made, and we will start the Sabbath out by talking about it. At 2 o'clock, the Vegas Golden Knights will take on the Vancouver Canucks. It's the first time they will play a real preseason game in their history. They've had a couple little exhibitions, but this is a real preseason game. And joining us in a few minutes from Vancouver, British Columbia, the Las Vegas Review-Journal's Steve Karp. I will talk a little about the horrible decision at T-Mobile Arena last night. And next week, the UNLV football team will be headed to Columbus, Ohio to play the eighth-ranked Buckeyes. A little later, Mark Anderson, who handles the UNLV beat for the RJ, will be here to talk about what will be by far the toughest game of the year for the Rebels. Plus, you'll hear Blazin' and Fact This on tap at Bubby's University. Earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff, where the only majors are mayhem and good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. That means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. And I am happy to be rolling out a new feature today. As I mentioned, the Golden Knights are up in Canada. They are playing their first game today. They've got a couple preseason games coming up here. The first one here is October, I believe October the 1st, I think is the first game. Matter of fact, let me take a look at that. But I think that is their first home game here at T-Mobile Arena. Might be before that. Matter of fact, I think it's actually in September, right? They've got one coming up, I think, in a week or two coming up here. But the first game is 2 o'clock shortly after the show today, not too long. You got the NFL. You've got the Vegas Golden Knights going on. And a lot of talk about that fight's going to go on for a while, man. I still can't believe the decision. I cannot believe that fight was actually a draw. And the guy that's going to be joining the show in a minute will be able to talk about that as well. Being from Hockey Town, I am super excited for our new feature, Nightcap, which will be a weekly staple on the show. It's all about the Vegas Golden Knights and handling You know, we'll be, well, I guess Megs will have players, we'll have coaches interviews, and special guests like Steve Karp, who is handling the Vegas Golden Knights beat for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, Steve is in Vancouver getting ready to see the Golden Knights make Las Vegas, and for that matter, the state of Nevada, history. Steve, how are our boys looking up in Canada, eh?
Well, they're on the plane. I know that. They're on their way up here. It's going to be mostly a younger group. You're not going to see Fleury. You're not going to see Englund or any of the real veteran guys. So I think they want to take a good, long, hard look at guys like Will Carrier and Shea Theodore and Brendan Leipzig and Thomas Nosek and see what these guys can really do, because they're the ones who are trying to vie for what are probably three or four realistic openings on this team.
Yeah, most of the spots, I think, as you said, realistically are taken. Hey, if you want to get firsthand information about the Vegas Golden Knights, follow Steve on Twitter, at Steve Karp RJ. Again, he does tweet on there, and you'll see articles like one in the paper today. And usually when you talk about a couple of veterans that initially you were kind of counting on coming in, and it looks like the injuries they've suffered over the course of their career, one with concussions, one with back issues, you wrote about it again in the RJ today. Normally that would be a bad thing, but based on cap space, that might actually work out to be a good thing for the Golden Knights.
Absolutely, that's why it was done. And they will, obviously we're talking about Mikhail Grabowski and David Clarkson, two veteran players who have been hampered by different injuries the last couple of years. Clarkson with a bad back, Grabowski with concussion issues, and of course that's a very sensitive topic in the NHL these days, so it appears neither guy passed his physical on Thursday, and so the team has to make a decision. And basically, as I wrote, they'll buy them out, they'll pay them what they're owed. In Grabowski's case, it's $5 million for this year. Clarkson, $5.2 million a year for the next three. But the good news is their money comes off the books because they were injuries sustained in hockey, and therefore it doesn't count against the Golden Knights salary cap. So if George McPhee wants to maneuver down the road, he has the room to do so.
You are listening. No, Steve, he does have the room to over $10 million. And again, this is nightcap. First time, we're normally going to have this later on in the show, but again, with it being the first game this afternoon, I wanted to get that done. And it's too bad the guys that are injured, so to speak, that are not going to be playing for the Golden Knights, that they are wingers rather than defensemen. Because, Steve, we talked about it last time you were on the show. They are defense-heavy to the tune of maybe five too many. What do you see playing out, and who, in regards to defensemen, you think is going to make this opening day roster? We know most of them already. There's only a couple of guys that are trying for that spot.
Well, I think today and Tuesday and even Thursday, Tuesday in Denver, Thursday in San Jose, will be very important. And I think that's why you're seeing the guys they took up here to Vancouver. And I'm talking about Griffin Reinhart, Shea Theodore, Clayton Stoner, to name three of those defensemen who are in the mix to try and land a spot. You know, you don't see Colin Miller up here. You don't see John Merrill up here. Those guys are pretty much in. You don't see Nate Schmidt. And so you kind of know Lucas Spezza and Derek Englund, those guys are going to be around. So that was the question of who's the sixth guy, who's the seventh D, and if George decides to go to an eighth D, who will that guy be? And that's why these games will basically determine their fate, along, of course, with what they've done in practice. So it's a very important time for those guys. It'll sort itself out. It always does. Guys will get hurt. Somebody's going to be going to the minors anyway, but nonetheless, it is an important day for those players.
No question about it. Steve, it came down to the wire last weekend. You wrote about it last week in the paper, but DirecTV and AT&T Sportsnet stepped up and helped many Nevadans be able to see the televised games without having to reach into their pockets. That was a big concern that seems to be alleviated, at least for this season.
Well, they still have to get the Cox deal done, and they have not gotten it done. So until that happens, the majority of the fans in Las Vegas and in Henderson are not going to be able to watch today's game. And there's still a little confusion from the DirecTV side of things, because supposedly you weren't supposed to have to pay extra for it, but I've been getting emails from subscribers who say that they do have to pay extra, and they're a little bit confused. They think they're getting a mixed message from what we reported and what the people at DirecTV are telling them. So what the DirecTV people told me was that you have to have a package that has at least 185 channels. I'm not a DirecTV subscriber, so I don't know what they call that package, that level of service. But if you have that or higher, supposedly you get AT&T Sportsnet, which, by the way, is up and running on DirecTV on channel, I think it's 683. You will be able to watch the game today if you have it, as well as on CenturyLink and UVerse and Dish. But unfortunately, they have not yet come to an agreement with Cox Cable. I thought, you know, when I talked to Bill Foley a week ago, he said they were real close. And then when I talked to Bill on Thursday, he said, it's not quite done yet. And so I'm starting to get pessimistic again about the possibility of making this thing happen in time for opening night in Dallas on October 6th.
Well, it seems like last minute is on the paper of a lot of things going on with the Golden Knights. If you want to see where the channels are, you actually listed them in last Sunday's paper. Check out on September 10th. I think it's 684 on DirecTV. And you talked about,
yeah.
I got to go and check how many channels I have. I don't know if I have the 180-some-odd channels. I do have DirecTV. I had to have it for the Sunday ticket. But
you better check your what your level of subscription is, because you may not get the game then.
Well,
you may have to upgrade your what you have. So it is confusing, and I can understand where some fans are a little angry. But we got our information direct from the people at DirecTV, so I don't know what to tell people. I mean, it's I feel bad for them. At some point, they will be able to figure out a way to watch the game today and throughout the season. I guess it just all depends on your level of service.
I had some friends bringing it over some hot dogs and wanted to check out Direct. Hey, guys, if you're listening, I got to go home and see how many channels I have. I might have to upgrade. Steve Karp, Vegas Golden Knights beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, is joining us from Vancouver, British Columbia, where in a couple hours the Vegas Golden Knights will suit up for a game for the first time in their history. The talk since the expansion draft has obviously been Marc-Andre Fleury. Is he good enough, or should I say, is a goalie capable of helping this team win, say, 35 games this season?
Sure, because if he's having a hot night in net and you can't put the puck by him, it enhances your chance of getting a point or two. So, absolutely. I think they've got two outstanding goalies in Fleury and Calvin Pickard. I think that was one of the best things George did on expansion draft night was getting his goaltending situation clarified. I mean, there's been clear clarity to this thing from day one. Those are your goalies. The other goalies at camp, they're basically trying to get a job with the Chicago Wolves and be that third guy when and if they need somebody in case Fleury or Pickard gets hurt. So, you know, the net is Fleury's. Pickard is good with it. He's going to play. And, you know, guys like Oscar Dansk and Dylan Ferguson and Yuri Patera and Lagasse, those guys are basically trying to get a job in Chicago or, at the worst, Quad City in the ECHL. But the goaltending is clear, and that's the one area that's not muddled in training camp.
the last line of defense, we know in hockey, is gigantic. We've seen teams throughout history, throughout my life as a hockey fan, make runs, deep runs in the postseason with a goaltender that gets hot, as you mentioned. So I guess 35 games and an eighth seed is probably not going to happen this year. But again, a hot goalie, 1-0 is as good as 10-0, 10-1, if your goalie can keep the puck out of the net. Before I let you go, Steve, you covered the fight game for a long time, and it wasn't that long before it wasn't that long ago where you would have been sitting in the front row watching this fight between Canelo Alvarez and Triple G. Sure if you had a chance to see it or if you had a chance to hear the rant between ESPN boxing analyst Teddy Atlas and Stephen A. Smith, but here's a small clip from that last night.
Boxing doesn't honor the things that should be honored. It honors money, control, power, and there's only certain power brokers in boxing, certain promoters, and they have the power. They have control who the judges agree, who the judges aren't going to be, so who the judges know if they want to work, who they have to vote for. And Las Vegas, where the money's going to come back there for a rematch, I mean, it's, there's no other way to, how could I stand here all week and say that is going to be a controversial outcome? Yeah. How do I know that?
I had it 115, 113 for Triple G. But the reality of the situation is that this has been tarnished by a judge that clearly had no business judging the fight. Adelaide Byrd, whatever her name is, 118, 110, she needs to be tested immediately. Makes no sense whatsoever. There's no way in hell that it's a 118, 110. That's a completely lopsided fight on either end. She had it for Canelo. There's no way on earth that Canelo won 118, 110. You want to sit up there and say a draw? Fine. You want to have him ahead by one round? I totally and emphatically disagree, but that's fine.
Steve, I did not see the fight, and it was one of the greatest rants ever. They literally, it was supposed to be SportsCenter, and it was breaking news, and Atlas and Smith went at it for about 50 minutes. You know, Teddy Atlas gets animated. He's jumping up and down in the set. I'm always worried the guy's going to drop dead of a heart attack when he gets going, but he is damn good at what he does, and Stephen A. Smith this time had it right. I mean, we've had conversations about judges before, you and I, Steve, on the show. Adelaide Byrd, I mean, was she wearing sunglasses where she just couldn't see what was going on in the ring?
Well, I did see the fight when I got to Vancouver last night. I watched it at a bar downtown, and I knew going in with Adelaide Byrd as one of the judges, there was definitely a possibility of controversy. And sure enough, you know, her work has been, I'll be kind when I say sketchy, for quite a while, even while I was still covering boxing at the RJ. And for Bob Bennett to give her such a plum assignment that she clearly doesn't deserve at this stage of her career, it really is on Bennett and the commission, because the commission approved her. There was no questioning her validity or her credentials to do a fight of this magnitude. So, and for Bennett to have to go before the media at the post-fight press conference last night, which the last time I saw that happen was when Tyson and Holyfield had their rematch, and Tyson bit Holyfield's ear, and Mark Ratner, who was executive director of the commission then, had to go and explain, along with Mills Lane, the referee, that night at the MGM Grand, what had happened. So you don't see that very often. And it just shows you, and Bennett basically pulled her out. Said she had a bad night. Her scorecard was too wide. I have no clue what she was watching. I had Triple G winning 15-13 in what I thought was not a great fight, but a very good fight. You know, I thought Canelo defensively did a lot of good things. I thought he countered well. I loved Triple G's pressure he put on him for most of the fight. And both guys had their moments. It was a very good fight. But it's unfortunate that one judge's scorecard marred it, and now you've got all this controversy going forward. You know, if she scores it 15-13 for Canelo, let's say, or, you know, there's no controversy. You know, there'll be people say, she was wrong. Just like, you know, people think, you know, Don Trello's 14-14 card may not have been correct, but we could have lived with it. But to have a score, to give him that many rounds is, to me, I mean, that's two rounds removed from a shutout. And there's no way he won that many rounds. He just didn't. And I know some of the rounds were close to score and hard, but, you know, the reality is she blew it. And then she had a bad night. And you know, you're obviously not going to see her work a big fight for a long time, maybe ever again. But I know people in MMA who've had her judge fights in the UFC have gone apoplectic over her cards over the years. So maybe the commission needs to take a long, hard look at her credentials at this point to see if she's still confident enough to judge a fight. I think she's in her late 60s. She might even be in her early 70s. She's been around quite a while, okay? But anyhow, it is sad, and it hurts Nevada. And frankly, they probably, if they have the rematch, and I believe they will, they should probably look at a different jurisdiction, maybe California, maybe New York at the Garden or Barclays Center for the rematch, and, you know, see if they can get a higher quality of judging.
It was a farce as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it took a good fight. Again, I didn't see the fight. My friends that did see it, that I spoke with afterwards, said, man, I really enjoyed the fight. It was worth the money paying for it to go see it on pay-per-view, go somewhere. But it really tarnishes it. You want a decision. These ties are terrible. Like Stephen A. Smith said, you know, and from what I've read about it and what people have said, it was closer than some people thought, but everybody concurred that Triple G won the fight in a close bout, and you know, he had the more effective punches. You look at the tail of the tape, he threw about 200 more punches. The only thing Canelo had in his side was, I think he was 33%, and Triple G was 30%, but again, he still landed 200 or 100 more punches. I mean, it wasn't close, and it's really a shame.
You know what it was, Brian? It was reminiscent of C.J. Ross's scorecard in first Pacquiao-Bradley fight, and she had Bradley winning by a wide margin when Pacquiao clearly won the fight.
Absolutely.
It's kind of in that ballpark.
Yeah, it is, and such a big fight. But again, that fight wasn't
egregious decisions.
It was, but to me, that fight wasn't nearly as entertaining as what I hear this fight was. I saw that one, and everyone said, no, I was entertained from start to finish. So what a shame that it has to end this way, and they set up the rematch, and I think Teddy Atlas is completely right. It's these promoters. You do need a governing body that says, no, this is wrong, and it'll never happen. It'll never happen. Too much money.
Yeah, but you know what? Even governing bodies don't get it right. You know, the NFL doesn't always get their decisions right. Look at the Brady thing and stuff. You know, so not every sports league, which has jurisdiction over what happens in its events, always gets it right. But, yeah, I mean, look, the Nevada Commission is in charge of oversight for this fight, and they blew it. They blew it. So, pure and simple.
But they did.
You know, the commission's going to have to take a long, hard look. The governor needs to look harder at who he appoints to the five-member commission. And I think the commission has to look at its executive director, who put the judges and the referee together. I thought Kenny Bayless did fine as the referee. You didn't hear a word one about him, which tells you that he did a fine job in the ring as the third man. But the executive director is in charge of picking the judges. The commission approves it. And so this is strictly on the commission and on Bob Bennett.
Well, I hope that they get it right. I'm still, you know, just still twisted about the whole thing because, again, you know, what was bothersome, too, I was listening to Teddy Atlas talk about it on ESPN, how the promoter takes out the judges, buys them a nice, prestigious dinner, and what other sport can you imagine?
Can you,
he said they did, and, you know, he said, can you imagine Jerry Jones being able to take out the officials before a big game of the Dallas Cowboys and pay for everything for them? How many red flags would be thrown at something like that? But it is what it is. You know, there'll be a rematch, and I'm looking forward to it. I won't miss the rematch based on what it was here. Steve Karp, Vegas Golden Knights beat writer at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Appreciate you joining us from way up there in Vancouver, British Columbia. Appreciate you, man.
Anytime, brother. Thanks.
We will talk to you very soon. Long overdue for a break. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. All right. Out of line. Fox Sports Radio about a little bit after 8:30. And NFL Week 2, man. Last week, Mags will pick ours later on, but we did terrible. We both took, you know, it was like the no-brainer of the week to me. I really thought Houston Texans at home against Jacksonville. I knew Jacksonville had a stout defense. We were aware of that. But you're thinking Houston, all I could think of was New Orleans, what they did the year that Katrina happened to them. They won the Super Bowl, and I thought we were going to see more out of Houston. And then, of course, Houston goes to Cincinnati on Thursday night and beats them on the road. J.J. Watt, we'll hear from him later on. Man, what an exceptional thing that guy did. But we got to talk about the breaking news if we're talking about the NFL. Mags, Sam Bradford out again with an injury. Last week, on Monday Night Football, has a career night against the New Orleans Saints. The guy literally was out of his mind. Bradford had 8 completions of 20 yards or more, was on fire. Delvin Cook looks like he's going to be the real deal, maybe rookie of the year at running back. I don't know. It's going to be between him and Hunt, I think, in Kansas City. But without Bradford, they go to Case Keenum, last year's starter for the Los Angeles Rams for most of the year. How much does this change the dynamic of the Minnesota Vikings?
I don't think it changes it much because I don't think a whole lot of Sam Bradford.
You know what I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think, obviously, it's a little bit of a downgrade, but Case Keenum played fairly well on a really crappy Rams team last year.
Well, they started like 3-0, didn't they? And then they just completely went in the tank. They disappeared.
Well, I think
they played crappy teams.
A lot of that was Jeff Fisher. I know they beat they lost to the 49ers to start the season. They got crushed, right? 28.
No, I'm almost positive they won the first 3 games last year.
I don't think so.
Well, you'll have
to
take a look and look it up and see which one of us is right. I'm not even looking at that right now. What I will tell you about this game is the Steelers were favored by 6.5. I'm sure that line is going to go up now a lot. I wish I would have taken that at 6.5 because I think they're going to kill them. The Steelers D is a little bit predictable.
They started 3-1. They lost the first game to the 49ers.
You're right.
They got shut out 28-0.
And then they won 3 straight.
Then they lost 4 in a row.
Yeah, then they were terrible.
Then they lost a lot of.
But I remember they went 3-1, and everyone started talking about the Rams without Jared Goff because it was Case Keenum who led them to that record. And then they kind of disappeared. But again, I was saying the Steelers' D is predictable. Third down, you're going to get a lot of zone defense. The pass rush might be a bit of a concern, as the one thing about the Vikings, Mags, besides having an okay defense, their O-line is really good. And you know how I know their O-line is really good? Because Sam Bradford succeeds behind it. And we both have the same opinion of him. He had a couple of good games last year, but now it's a knee injury again. This guy has been injury-prone throughout his NFL career, and I think there is a big drop-off. I think Sam Bradford and Case Keenum are in 2 different categories, and I think it is going to hurt the Vikings. I like the Steelers a lot in this game. Another game, and I was speaking about Dallas, one of the most anticipated matchups of the day, the afternoon game between Dallas and Denver. 2 undefeated teams, 1-0, big deal. But Dallas, at least for one more week, is going to still have Ezekiel Elliott. And Denver, to me, is the best third down defense in the National Football League. They've got unbelievable, probably the best trio of corners in the league, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris Jr., and Rogan. Those guys are incredible, Mags. And I'm really looking forward to the matchup of watching Cole Beasley, who'll probably be covered by Chris Harris Jr., because Dallas runs these crossing routes. It's going to be exciting to see this game. Denver is going to load the box, and they're not going to let Ezekiel Elliott beat them and win this game. And again, Denver's corners will be on islands, but if there's any cornerbacks in the National Football League, I think, Mags, that can be in an island, it's the Denver Broncos, man. That defense is ridiculous. And I don't know. Dallas is favored by 2.5 points at Denver. Denver nearly blew it to San Diego, but held on to win. What do you think of this game?
I think I'd stay away from it, although I think the Broncos are pretty good. I think Trevor Siemian's actually a decent quarterback. I don't think he's... I know there was a lot of talk in the preseason.
He's not as good as Dak Prescott.
You know, I think we'll see how good Dak Prescott is if the Cowboys are without Zeke Elliott for 6 weeks. You know, that completely changes the dynamic of that offense.
Agreed.
So, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, well, Dak Prescott's this great quarterback. He's had Dak Prescott has a fantastic offensive line, the best in football, and he's got arguably the best running back in football. So, you know, and he's got a great wide receiver and a great tight end. So, you know, we'll see how much it impacts Dallas should Zeke Elliott be gone. But anyway, as far as the Broncos and the Cowboys, I think Denver's defense is really good. I think there were some things that allowed San Diego to get back into that game, but I thought the Broncos really dominated it. And, you know, the better team won that game, at least at home. And, you know, I think in the NFL, you really kind of start to understand what your team is after 2 weeks, after week two. I mean, like, for some people, the Jets, they suck. We knew that going into the season, and 0-2 is not going to change our thoughts on them. However, Jacksonville has an opportunity to really say, hey, we are real. After going into Houston last week and beating the Texans, and then they host the Titans today. So I think Denver's really good. I think they're better than we thought because their defense allows them to stay in games. And I think Simeon is a good enough manager of the game. And I think as long as C.J. Anderson's healthy and they can run the ball, the Broncos are going to win a lot of football games. Now, when you take that dynamic out of the offense, should he get injured again? All of a sudden, it changes everything for the Broncos, like it did last season. So, you know, I think they're a pretty good team. And honestly, I think they're going to win today. I don't know if they're going to cover. I'm staying away from that as far as a betting.
If you say you think the Broncos are going to win, they're underdogs, two and a half point underdogs at home.
At home, yeah. So
I like them.
I think so, too. I think they're going to win the game outright. So I guess they would, you know, they obviously would win that bet. But, you know, it's one of those games where it's two teams that are, I think, pretty good. I think the Cowboys could be in the Super Bowl, assuming they keep Zeke Elliott. I think they're that good. But, you know, again, you take Zeke Elliott out of the equation for six games, it completely changes everything.
It does. And another game that is highly anticipated today, you've got a rematch of the NFC Championship game in the same place. Is it deja vu all over again? The Packers go to Atlanta. We know that the Falcons have one of the most explosive offenses in the National Football League. As far as productivity from 20-yard plays goes, they are as good as anybody, the best in the league. But here's what I'm going to say. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan is Matty Ice. And sometimes Matty Ice is ice cold. Sometimes he has great games. He had a tremendous season last year. But if you take out last year, Mags, and look at his year, he's not much better than Andy Dalton. I mean, I am telling you, I think I have said it for years, Andy Dalton's overrated. I think Matt Ryan is overrated. And I'm telling you what, I think the Packers, even though I don't want it to happen, I think the Packers are going to go into Atlanta and they are going to avenge last year's loss in the NFC Championship game.
I'm going to pull the Lee Corso and say, not so fast, my friend. Matt Ryan is an elite quarterback. He showed it last year. It's not his fault the team lost the Super Bowl. You know, that came down to play calling. That came down to the inability to make stops on the defensive end. I think Matt Ryan and my cousin Brandon is actually at the game. He's a diehard Falcons fan, and he flew down from New Jersey. He was at the soccer game yesterday. They had 70,000 people in that stadium to watch a soccer game. Those fans are going to be rabid. They're opening up their new stadium.
True.
Green Bay, they looked okay last week against a pretty good Seattle Seahawks team. However, I think Atlanta, again, week two, we're going to find out because they did struggle against the Bears. We're going to find out, is there a Super Bowl hangover or is there not right away? If they win this game today, and I think if they win it convincingly, I think we could put that Super Bowl hangover to bed because they'll have won two football games to start the season and they'll have beaten maybe another Super Bowl contender in the Packers to do so.
You know, I even if they win this game, which they're expected to do, they're 3-point favorites at home, I still won't be sold on the Atlanta Falcons. I still think they will find a way to choke when it's all said and done. And I'm not going to disagree with you that it wasn't Matt Ryan's fault that they won, that they lost the Super Bowl. But again, he didn't make plays at the right time. He threw some incomplete passes, stopped the clock, gave New England more time. I didn't like the whole thing. And I still think the Packers are going to go in there and win today. A couple more games I want to talk about. We got to take a break. The Patriots at the Saints. It's an anticipated game because you've got two teams 0-1. Drew Brees seems to get the best of Tom Brady. I think they're 3-1 against each other going into this game. So Brady's looking to avenge himself. A couple things to notice about this game going on. Number one, Adrian Peterson. We all know he yelled at Sean Payton during the game, was very unhappy about only being in a 9 offensive plays. But shame on him, man. The Saints are a passing team, dude. Although Mark Ingram did have 1,000 yards last year, it's a passing team. And on the other side of the ball, the bottom line is, if Sam Bradford can beat up the Saints, then Tom Brady sure can as well. And I think that the staple of New England's passing game is the crossing routes. The bottom line is the Falcons had that done. They were able to take that away. You use a robber back there, Magnum. The way to combat those crossing routes are you rush three. You've got to have a team capable of rushing three, getting enough pressure on the quarterback so you can drop a couple men back in coverage called the robber defense, and that seems to be the thing that works against New England. Kansas City and Andy Reid did a lot of robber last week, if you saw it, and you saw what happened to Tom Brady. He looked pedestrian, but I still think that there is no way. The Saints have young, inexperienced cornerbacks. I think this is an easy-peasy win for New England. I think Brandon Cooks goes home, has a big game against his former team, and I see the Saints going down 0-2. They're just not any good anymore, and that's just the way that it is.
Yeah, they're at the end of their line there down in New Orleans with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. It's the curtain is getting ready to drop, and their defense has always been questionable. Now the defense is terrible. I don't see how the Patriots don't bounce back in a big way. I could see them blowing the Saints off the field.
Well, easily. I think so. I think so as well. I think that don't worry about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick will find a way to turn things around. I love the naysayers after week one. First of all, Kansas City is a very good football team. And I don't think there will be a soul surprise if Alex Smith continues to play the way he played a week ago Thursday, if Kansas City Chiefs went on to the Super Bowl. Mags, I know we got to take a break, but I can't leave without talking 30 seconds about the Monday night game that I'll be at tomorrow night at Buffalo Wild Wings. Of course, my Detroit Lions going up against the New York Giants at MetLife Stadium. It's a 5:25 start. The Giants defense pitched a shutout the last time these two teams played each other, Mags. It could happen again, being that it's on the road. The problem is with the Giants. Here's the deal. The Giants are struggling. They don't have a running game, and their franchise quarterback, Eli Manning, is suffering from three things. You want to know what those three things are? Number one, a lack of protection. Number two, a lack of timing in his passing game. And number three, a lack of trust in his wide receivers when Odell Beckham Jr. isn't in the game. We saw all those things last week. That could spell doom, especially the way the Lions defense played in the second half against Arizona. If they do that again against New York, it could be a long day for New York. But the bottom line is, Jackson and Apple are two great cornerbacks for the New York Giants. So the bottom line is New York going to be able to stop the running game? Theo Riddick, what he's becoming, is one of the best third down backs, in my opinion, in the NFL, because he is dangerous, he's big, and he can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think New York Giants have a good third down defense. Interesting matchup. I hate calling a winner on this, but I think the Lions are 1-1 after Monday night.
Yeah, I think the Giants are going to win that game. It's at home. It's in New York or New Jersey. Eli, you know what? Eli is what he is. He's a guy who's always been good quarterback, not an elite quarterback. However, everyone looks at those two Super Bowl rings. He's in the Hall of Fame because of it. I think the Giants will be all right. Once Odell Beckham gets back into the swing of things, now we have no idea how long that's going to be. They'll be fine offensively. I mean, when you've got a three-headed monster like Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, and Brandon Marshall, you're going to be able to move the ball. That's going to open up the running game for them. Even if the Giants go to 0-2. Now, the problem is the Giants could go, if they go 0-2, their schedule the next few weeks, it could snowball real quick. So this is a must-win for them.
Well, and you know, with the Lions as well, this is a character game for the Detroit Lions. Going on the road after a big win at home against Arizona, they exposed Arizona's offense. They exposed the fact that Carson Palmer should flip and retire. But if they can go to New York and beat the Giants, this Lions team could get some momentum as well. They've got a tough schedule ahead.
Well, here's the problem. They play Detroit at home tomorrow, next 2 weeks, at Philadelphia, at Tampa Bay. They host the Chargers. At Denver, they host the Seahawks. Then they have their bye week.
They got a tough schedule.
That's a tough stretch.
It's a tough stretch. The Giants aren't as good
at Philadelphia, at Tampa. If they lose, even if they win tomorrow, they could be 1-3 going into that game against San Diego or Los Angeles.
They could be. We'll see. Hey, listen, you're listening to Out of Line. We'll come back. We've got Mark Anderson talking a little UNLV football on the other side. This is Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I'm Brian Feldman. Magnum on the other side of the Wheel of Steel. Mark Anderson on the phone. We're going to get to Mark in 1 second. Mags, last week, we both went 0-1, picking what I thought was a no-brainer.
Yeah, we both were on the same game.
Same game. Texas, you know, the Houston Texans, I really thought, again, with the hurricane. And again, I just got caught up in what happened with Katrina years ago in the Saints. And I got delusioned, and I didn't look at how good Jacksonville's defense was. Didn't look at the fact that the Texans aren't as good as I thought they were, and we got beat. And here, Todd Dewey, here he's the betting. He goes ahead, and he wins. He wins. So what's your pick this week, Mags? I got Dewey's pick. Last week, by the way, if you want to know, Dewey took Carolina, giving 4.5 to San Francisco. That was like a no-brainer. So go ahead, Mags. You start us off and give me your pick.
Well, I am still not a believer in the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't care if they're at home. I don't believe that they're that good. So I'm going to go with the Titans laying a point on the road in Jacksonville. I think the Titans are going to win the game outright. I just cannot see Tennessee starting 0-2. This is supposed to be a playoff team. I know they lost last week to a really good Raider team. I just don't see Jacksonville going 2-0. I don't see Tennessee going 0-2. Like I said, I'm not a believer in Blake Bortles or the Jaguars. I'm going Titans.
You're taking Titans and giving up the 2 points.
No, 1 point.
1 point. Well, Dewey's got him here as 2 because he's actually taking Jacksonville. He's trying to take 2 points. He's saying +2. We're going to give Dewey, you got 1 point with Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'm going right off okay, of Westgate.
That's today's line.
The current line, yeah.
Today's line, you're taking Jacksonville and you get 1 point. So you guys are going right against each other.
Wow.
And, you know, Mags, to me, it's like another no-brainer game, and something scares the hell out of me about this game, and I don't know what it is. We talked about it earlier. Andy Reid off of byes, even though it's not a bye week, it's a long week, and he's playing his former team, the team that fired him, the Eagles. I got to see the Chiefs. I can't see him having a letdown after that New England game. I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. I know the Eagles' defensive front might be the best in the National Football League, but I still like the Chiefs. I think they've got weapons with Hunt and Tariq Hill. I think they're going to be fine. Yeah, they lose Barry in the secondary, but I still think the Chiefs are going to be fine. I think they can cover the 5 points, and that's the way I'm going. But without further ado, let's bring him in. On the phone, giving up a rare day of sleeping again, is Las Vegas Review-Journal's UNLV football and basketball beat writer Mark Anderson. Marking, you know, I don't know, what's our fourth or fifth year we've had Mark on the show. Mark, listen, thanks for joining, and since I'm not able to make it out to practice, start by letting us know what is the mindset of this team knowing that they have a better chance of climbing Mount Everest than they do of winning this game next Saturday.
Yeah, it's really hard to gauge. I think, obviously, beating Idaho really helps as far as mindset goes. But that game showed their mindset's pretty good anyway. You know, they handled the opening loss to Howard really well as far as coming out focused the following week and getting the job done. So I don't really have a question about their mindset. My question is, you know, how did they come out of this game? You know, particularly physically, especially if you know they have to get some key players hurt. I would think that's got to be the biggest concern going into this game.
Yeah, I would think so too. And you kind of answered a question. I know it was going to be kind of a rhetorical question, but I wanted to hear from you how big that win in Idaho was last week after the horrendous defensive performance in the home opener against Howard. That was huge for him, wasn't it?
You're right. You mentioned the defense. I think that was the side of the ball that benefited the most because they couldn't do anything against Howard, and which is, you know, when you look at what Howard happened to Howard yesterday against Richmond, I mean, that's just that makes that loss look even worse. But I still have major questions about the defense. I know Ohio State's offense is struggling, but I mean, you know, they're going to be fine against UNLV in this game. But going forward after this game, you know, will the defense improve? You know, because there's still some winnable games on that schedule. I mean, the week after against San Jose State, I mean, UNLV needs to come back and win that game. And I don't really have any questions about UNLV's offense, but the defense has got to be the unit that steps up and makes some plays.
A lot of new faces on that side of the ball. We're talking to Mark Anderson from the RJ. Is Armani Rogers as good as advertised? Or should I say, from what you've seen, does he have what it takes to be that good? I mean, we all heard the comparison to Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty ridiculous at this point in his career, but he is he's talented. There's no question about it. I mean, when you that pass he threw to Devontae Boyd in Idaho, I mean, I know Boyd was wide open, but that pass was a laser, and Boyd hit right in stride, and it was an NFL-type pass, and that's the kind of talent he has, and he's got the ability to make plays with the speed. So he's really good, and I think he's going to. He has the chance to go down as one of the all-time greats at UNLV.
I wonder how this offense, if they can do anything against that stout Ohio State defense. All right, Mark, I'm putting you on the spot. Looking into a crystal ball, what is Mark Anderson's headline going to be in the sports section of next Sunday's paper?
Probably onto San Jose State, as a certain New England coach might say. Just because I don't. This is a game that UNLV is going to get routed, and most people know that. And so I don't think there's a lot of mystery going into this game. To me, the question is what happens from here. And I am curious to see how they come out of this game physically. And to me, that's going to be pretty telling going forward.
It is something that I've talked to my friends about as well. I almost think it's unfair. It's such a physical mismatch. The last thing I'll ask you, Mark, before you go, do you think the offense will be able to put up some points against this team? I mean, they've got, the running game and the offensive production has been good almost against everyone. Obviously, this is a whole different caliber team. But if the offense could, say, put up 17 points against Ohio State, how much confidence would that give them going forward?
Yeah, I think they can. I really do like this offense. And even with all the mistakes they made in the opening game, they still scored 40 points. So I think this is an offense that, I don't think they'll score 30 at Ohio State, but I think they can get around 17 or so. And, if they can do that and move the ball, I think they'll feel pretty good about themselves.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you joining the show. I know you're off to Columbus next week. Being from Michigan, thank God you don't have to drive through Ohio. You just get to fly in and out, because that might be the boringest state in the country to drive through.
Mark, sounds like a Michigan guy.
I am a Michigan guy, but trust me, the weather is worse there than it is in Detroit. The RJ's beat writer covering UNLV football and basketball, Mark, is a frequent tweeter, and you can follow him at MarkAnderson65. As always, my friend, appreciate you.
All right, thanks for having me on, Brian. Take care.
Absolutely. All right, Mags, it's that time. We got just enough time to pull it off. Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, stone's throw from Centennial's Hospital. Two happy hours every day. There is no place better in America to go for wings, beer, and sports. And I will be there tomorrow night hosting Nevada's best Monday night football party. We've got replica jerseys. We've got wing parties. Come on down and join me. 5:30 start. The Giants hosting my Detroit Lions. It would be unfair after what the Cleveland Indians just did, winning 22 straight games, 4 short of the Major League record, not to award them with blazing. I still don't think they'll win the World Series, but I do think they have the 2017 American Cy Young Award winner in Corey Kluber. And maybe me saying I don't think they'll win, it's because they're a division rival, the Detroit Tigers. Come on. And I don't like them. Because if they do win it all, at this point, it won't be an upset to anyone, including me. Hey, listen, we're out of time. It is out of line. I want to thank Steve Karp, the beat writer covering the Vegas Golden Knights. I want to thank Mark Anderson, the beat writer covering the UNLV Rebels. I want to thank future Hall of Fame producer Magnum. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. We'll be back next Sunday, same time, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights.